Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. This show is a presentation of horror, thriller, and suspense, and is intended for a mature audience. Join us at your own risk.
Well, welcome to the Grim and Bloody Podcast. My name is Kevin Nicholson, writer for HorrorNews.net, Scary Monsters Magazine, We Belong Dead Magazine, and with me is the usual crew of suspects. We've got Anthony Durown. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine. Anthony is knee-deep in remodeling the website to now turn it into the Grim and Grim Bloody Podcast.
Oh, it's all live now.
Yeah, how's it going?
The GrimBloodyPodcast.com. You can visit it right now,
and you can submit if you want to be a guest on our show, you can submit a form through the website. Really easy.
As easy as breathing.
Can I do that?
No. I don't know. You know, it depends. After you're drunk, if you're trying to breathe, that might be a little difficult. Anyway, we've got Al Omega. Hi, Al. Award-winning creature feature show host.
Hey there. And yes, I am surviving Vegas. Very exciting. My suit got loose. It went feral. I told people that my suit was missing. People thought I lost my luggage, but no. The suit went feral. I was hiding out in the coat rooms at the casinos, grabbing girls. And which is giving me an idea for a whole new movie. Cursed Suit.
That sounds like that would be produced by Bob Mackie. But
we can make that in a weekend if we just have to get a whole one room with a bunch of cloaks in it and a bunch of front pictures of the casinos.
Ask our guest about that. Joe Flynn, how are you doing, Joe? Another award-winning host of CreaTV, The Joe Flynn Show.
I am doing wonderful. Not as eventful as Al's vacation, but I'm safe and sound from that pants debacle.
There you go. And with us today, we are very honored to have this wonderful gentleman, an actor, a producer. It has a connection to, very strong connection to Hollywood royalty. And I, of course, am speaking about the wonderful Miles John Dalton. And Mr. Dalton, before we go in, when I mention out to the folks out there that you are the great nephew of a slightly iconic player in the golden age of Hollywood, that is Mr. Carl Malden. And you've got I'm sure we'll have a lot of stories to that we'll be talking about, but Miles, welcome. How are you doing today?
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm doing good. Honor to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
That is quite.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks to Pauline Pert, who recommended and sent me a photo, and I just looked at it and I go, "Wow, this guy is gorgeous. We've got to get him on our show." Of course, we're doing audio only, so.
Very sweet, and God bless her for recommending.
Well, and I got it. I saw when I was doing some research on you, I saw that there was a comment, and I'm not quite sure who I can attribute it to, but there was a comment that said that you were reminiscent, I guess, in both skill and look as something connected with old Hollywood. With the golden age of Hollywood, I'm supposing that that's the style that you carry yourself as a actor in your personal life. Perhaps you carry some of it on screen. It could be something the look. Is that something kind of that you're honored by, or do you react to that?
I'm very honored by that, and that's my favorite. That's my favorite time in cinema, and it doesn't get any better than those classic movies of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. It's the most glorious time. So I'm very honored that I was even associated with that kind of look. And I was weaned on those movies, and I've been a movie fan, so I've been watching those movies ever since I was a kid. Yeah. So it's a great comment. I'm very honored.
And I have to say, you actually, well, let's kind of give this questioning a start. I actually have to say, you got your start. We were just talking about before the mic went on. You got your start in a very, very small, you know, role in what is a modern day classic, at least of the last 50 years, horror film, The Legend of Hell House.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe talk about just a little bit about how that came into play.
Honestly, I was so small. I don't remember a whole very much of it. I know that it came through my parents actually signed me up with an agency.
Uh-huh.
And it was an agency in LA, but at the time they also had connections to London. And so they, a very, very tiny role, you blink and you miss me. But it's at the same time, it's something, doesn't matter how small it is, you just list it and you say, well, at least I was in that. Very, just very, very vague memories of it. I remember the sets were scary. I found it was just, because I was a child, I was just so blown away by it all. But it's interesting when one grows up and you watch it, and then your perspective's completely different, and then you see the movie in its totality, and it's really mind blowing. And it's amazing for me to think that I even had a small part in being part of it. So it's really fantastic.
Well, you know, as someone who does a bit of acting myself, if I were offered to do one role in one movie, any role, even a background character, that would have been the movie to be in. As we kind of commented, for a lot of people, certainly for myself, that is one of the great horror movies, certainly of the decade, and probably the best haunted house movie ever, as far as I'm concerned.
I concur with you. It's really creepy and really well done. And the amazing thing about it is that it also stands up extremely well today. Even though it was made in 73, it still packs a wallop now.
Yes, on reflection, I don't think there's any portion of it that, I think they use a reel-to-reel tape recorder at one point, but other than looking at some of the minor technological differences, the entire plot and look still stand up today.
Absolutely.
That's like they keep saying they want to redo Forbidden Planet.
Excuse me, no.
Yeah.
No, but I agree with Al and Kevin and Anthony, who actually, being the youngest out of us all, finally saw the movie and he loved it. That is one of the all-time classics, and I salute you for being even in it if you blink and you miss me type scene.
It's one of these associations that you just... even though one played just a very, very minute part in it, that it's just a glorious association, and it's just a great horror movie. What's interesting is showing people that movie now and not telling what year it was made, and see if they can spot anything that's different about it, you know, as far as it being an older movie because it's done so well. You know, and like you mentioned, the fact, aside from a reel-to-reel tape recorder, there's nothing about it that looks overly dated at all. So it's really fantastic.
Very true.
Absolutely.
And Miles, can you tell us a little bit about your newest film called The Crypt of Evil?
Yeah, absolutely. Crypt of Evil is in pre-production right now.
Nice.
And... it basically is it's a dream of mine, and I'll tell you why. Because the cast is full of people that I grew up watching, and I'm a big fan of European movies, Italian movies, of course, all the Italian horror movies and foreign horror movies, as well as just all kinds of Italian movies of the 60s and the 70s. And some of the people I have in the movie were people I've always wanted to meet and work with, like Gianni Macchia and Antonio Cantafora, who's in Baron Blood, by the way, with Elke Sommer.
Yes.
Antonio Cantafora is in Crypt of Evil. And people like Luke Miranda and Melissa Longo. These are people I've always watched. And so it's a big thrill to actually get to know them, speak to them, and have them say that they would love to be in Crypt of Evil. So first and foremost, it has a very, very personal, deeply personal meaning to me. And it's the plot of it is basically, it's classic, yet at the same time, I'm putting all kinds of twists in it, and you're gonna love this. It's takes place on a big palatial estate out in the country. And
where did you get that that image?
House. It's a big classic manor house, and the story is basically a large group of ancient Egyptian art dealers convene upon this house in the country. And they're convening there because there's going to be a private auction of rare Egyptian items hosted by the Baron von Orlok, who has these rare items. And they come to the house on invitation only to view and to bid on these rare Egyptian items. And of course, strange and disturbing things follow over the course of the weekend. So that's it. That's basically the premise regarding Crypt of Evil, and I'm currently in pre-production with it, and it's a very complicated movie logistically, because one would think that if it takes place mainly in one location, but the logistics just in getting everybody there and getting everything set up and accommodating everyone's schedule is quite. It's quite challenging. And so that's my latest project. And so I'm knee deep into that. I'm also very deep into getting my recently completed feature, Dreams of Darkness, securing the distribution deal with that. And I'm already secured a deal. And that I'm hoping will be out in time for Halloween. In October. Well,
all right.
You'll be happy to know that we are also in talks to have one Lonnie Fleming on our show coming up in the next next few weeks, and we will be promoting Crypt of Evil more. And
thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Certainly, if you wish to have us, I don't know about Anthony, but we're all fans of that 70s Euro horror. I'm like as big of a Blind Dead fan as you could find.
I'm a fan of a good movie. I don't care the time era. I don't care if it's 4K resolution, 720 black and white. If it's an engaging, tense movie, I'm about it.
That's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's a great story and you enjoy it, that's really what the bottom line is. That's what matters most. Yeah, I concur with you. Lone Fleming is a beautiful person. She's a personal friend of mine, and she is going to be playing the Baroness von Orlok in Crypt of Evil.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So she's nobility, and she partakes in the strange goings on.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw, I think it's a teaser that you have on YouTube, I think it is.
Yes, yes.
And her in a cigarette is erotic, is sex. And the way she just talks to the other father character.
That's Antonio Mayans, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is just disturbing, just because she comes off as the keeper of secrets. And, you know, like, father, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Yes, yes. And she does a great job with that. And it was my suggestion that she smoke a cigarette in a church. She's a reverend. She is disrespecting the location that she's in. And she's smoking in a very irreverent manner, disregarding the holiness of the setting. And she did a great job with that. And so did
Antonio. She looks like I don't give a shit.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm in control. And
exactly.
It's me, Luigi.
I do want to ask. I do see that. Are you co-directing this? It does seem like there's a shared directing credit with Nikolai Maldon.
Yes. Yeah. We're co-directors. Yeah. We're co. And I'm also in the cast as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can tell you this: one of the great things about dealing with Alon Fleming and Antonio Mines is that they're so experienced that directing them is very easy, because I just had to give them a few directions of what the mood is, what their character's like, and they take it from there, and they did wonderfully. Yeah, so it was very easy directing them and getting them to give that kind of performance.
I remember a story when I was talking to you, Jimmy Sangster, the former screenwriter, longtime screenwriter for Hammer.
Yes, and yes.
It brought up the question of, because he had directed a film with Joan Collins in it, and I was talking about, I had mentioned that Joan Collins was, how was that? Joan Collins was known for being a difficult actress, is known for being a difficult actress to deal with, kind of a prima donna and so forth. And he says, yes. No problem at all. Reason why? On day one, 8 o'clock in the morning, she knew every one of her lines and she knew every one of her marks. Where does
that's the everyone. Yes, and that's the mark of a pro, where they come to this set and they do that. And I found it's easy if one makes the direction very clear cut, and you're dealing with a pro, that they come prepared, and it's actually at that point very easy. Did you hear that funny story? Sangster, when the first day of shooting, I think A Lust for a Vampire, where Jute Stensgaard is coming off the coach when she arrives at the house.
Yes.
Remember, you know that scene?
Yes.
And evidently, you're going to love this, but before the shooting was to begin, Jute Stensgaard goes up to Sangster and says, "What's my motivation for getting off this and going getting off the carriage and going into the house?" And Jimmy Sangster said, "Your motivation is not to stumble."
Don't that's fall Jimmy. Flat that's, on your that's face.
Jimmy. That's total Jimmy, if you know him. That's total Jimmy.
No bullshit, no pretentiousness, and very clear-cut and very practical.
As every actor has had that moment that they have to step out and do something, it's like, please help me screw this up. Please help me screw this up. I'm sure that's going to be a problem for them, but nonetheless.
You'd be surprised at how many actors and actresses have problems with the physical actions, whether it's drinking a glass of brandy and saying their lines and holding in their hand, or going to pick up, getting a phone. And quite often it's the mechanical things that get screwed up. You're doing something, or you're walking from point A to point B, and you've got to carry this, or you've got to turn around and pick this up. It's amazing how easy it is to mess that up.
As Christopher Lee, playing a Saruman on Lord of the Rings, when he's in a citadel, there's a scene where he's walking up some steps to the orb, and one of the outtakes is he turns around and he snaps, because you cannot glide in these shoes and this outfit, because it just gets in the way going upstairs. And especially at his age, he really, really didn't want to fall down hard on some steps.
Yeah, big time. At that point, he's already a veteran of so many movies, and that stuff couldn't even befall him, even at his age and with that kind of experience. It's a crazy business.
It is.
Now, speaking of Christopher Lee, of course, he did a lot of vampire movies, and I see that you are playing Dracula in a one or two little flicks, and I have to tell you, I haven't seen your work before tonight, I have to admit to that, and listening to your voice, because I had no idea what you sounded like.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to see what you do with Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
You did great things with that voice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's deep.
It's a Christopher Lee style.
It's a role I've always wanted to play. I've always wanted to play Dracula. And
I was going to say, was the transplant from Barry White very expensive?
It was funny. Someone said that to me once, that getting a call from me is like getting a call from Barry White.
That's right. No, seriously, because I did read a little bit, Miles, that you're a musician.
That's correct. I've been a drummer since I was a child.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That is awesome, because like as a child, I would barely be able to hit the beat of a drum. Yeah.
It's a very hard instrument to learn to play well. It's probably the hardest instrument to learn to play. To play really well is very difficult.
Very true. I can say that.
Yeah. It's taken years, and it's in my blood. So I'm still playing now, and I love it.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You know.
I've always been artistic like that, and. But you know what's interesting? I'll tell you this, guys, is that I just wanted to interject this, because we all have these seminal moments when we're little kids, and what got us interested in movies or horror movies. And I was meaning to tell you guys this, is that for me, the moment was Boris Karloff as Frankenstein.
There's a good start, yeah.
I was maybe 6 years old. And I saw the first Frankenstein with Karloff. Shock Theater, as I'm sure you guys know, Shock Theater. Every city had its version of Shock Theater. Yeah. I saw Karloff, and of course I was mesmerized. That's it. That was the moment.
You know, it's funny. I think we all have that story. For you, it's Karloff as Frankenstein. For me, it was Lon Jr. as the Wolfman.
Fantastic. Yes.
That just got me into it. And really what got me into that was his performance as the tortured Larry Talbot, that he is cursed to do something so appalling that he can't even conceive of it. And he's pulled into murdering, you know, becoming a savage beast. And you really feel for him.
It's really extraordinary. And the thing, let's see if you guys concur with me, but the thing that impresses me about Chaney as the Wolfman, he's more impressive in his physicality when he's made up as the Wolfman than he is an actor speaking dialogue lines.
Yeah.
Yes.
As the Wolfman, he is absolutely extraordinary. And he's better with his physicality and his expressions and the way he moves than he is actually saying dialogue lines. That when he's looking normal, like we've seen him throughout in movies, what's impressive is how he's able to emote as the Wolfman. That's what always blew me away.
Right. It is.
I think that's what's some of what we talked about, your great uncle being, you know, Carl Malden. I always, one of the things that always drew me to Carl was that he was also always this great everyman. That he was this, you know, this guy that you really, whatever was happening to him, you really fell for his plot. Like, you really got behind him because he's just this, most of the time, he's this good guy. And that's the same way that Lon was. When he's not the Wolfman, I agree that his physicality is just tremendous, but when he's not the Wolfman and he's practically begging to die. You really want to get behind him and say, like, you want to give him a great big hug and say, I'll help you in any way I can. And that's what makes the ending to the Wolfman, to me, the finest, saddest ending of any monster film ever made.
There's no doubt. And the empathy that you have for him, that one has for him, when you, because he does such a great job at being tortured, and that it's just it's weird to hear him say in the movie that he wants to die, because one doesn't normally hear this in movies where someone says, "I want to die." And the way he says that is incredible, and it's a line of dialogue that one normally doesn't hear in movies.
That whole scene gets me is the whole scene where he admits I think it's to his father, where he says, "I killed Richardson with the groundskeeper," and so forth. And it's like, I don't know who I might kill next. And that whole scene, he's like, near tears, on it. And you can see, like, this poor guy who just wants to be a guy is now pulled into this whole supernatural nightmare.
And it gets even more gut-wrenching when he attacks his father, and his father has to canes him.
And his father sees that he's killed his son.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, my poor son. Yeah. But no.
So I do want to say, I'm taking a look at your upcoming films, and I'm seeing that you're doing Frankenstein versus Dracula, and I'm seeing, okay, your co-star is going to be Antonio Mayans as Van Helsing.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you going to have to go easy on him, or is he going to have to go easy on you? I don't know, when you have the confrontation scenes, because Antonio can probably still bring it physically.
He's really fantastic. He's really fantastic, and he can... right now, I couldn't think of anybody better to be Van Helsing than Antonio Mayans. And he's got a great voice, and he's got the foreign accent when he's speaking. It's in early stages of pre-production, but it's something I always thought would be a good combination as far as seeing these two kinds of characters meet. And Antonio is, he was born to play Van Helsing. He really was. Yeah. Who are your guys' favorite Van Helsings throughout cinema?
Peter Cushing. Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
Peter Cushing all the way.
Yeah, that one.
I might get slapped around, but I liked Henry Jackman. Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman.
Really?
I know that movie got derided. Boy, it got pissed on.
Yes, we know.
But it's really, I'm just a Hugh Jackman fan. I thought he was good in it. Yeah.
Do you know who never gets talked about? Is Larry Olivier in the Langella version?
Yes.
I have problems with that film, but I really like Olivier in that, especially doing the double dutch.
Yeah, he's very good as Van Helsing. I concur with you. I saw it when it came out at theaters, and it's we could go with the first thing. It's not a love story.
Yes.
It's not about Dracula falling in love with Nina,
I just start with the hair with the dry blown hair and the no fangs.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem that seems to, something that works well on the stage but not in film. And John Adams should have known that.
It's a problematic movie. It was But that's the point when it's starting to get romanticized.
But I will say that sequence in the sewers under where they open up the coffin for Lucy, and
I know the scene.
They go into the sewers. That scene is as creepy, horrific, and disgusting as you will ever have. And I'm taking a look at the Lucy character as the vampire. She's got fangs. She's got blood. She's a zombie. What the hell happened with Frank? With Frank? What's going on?
I agree, because you're thinking that Langella should have donned the bloodshot eyes and fangs and bear his fangs and draw blood and everything. Uh-huh. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Right.
That stuff with Lucy.
Yeah.
That actress was made up. So absolutely astonishing.
Yes.
But even today, it's creepy as hell.
Right? Yep.
The the way she looks and the way she's coming at Larry Olivier. Oh.
But I like the scene because she comes up to, like halfway to Larry Olivier, gets distracted just by Donald Pleasance coming at her from behind. In the moment that she gets distracted, Larry Olivier picks up the stake and gets ready. And yeah. It's almost like, yeah, it's his daughter, but also, come on, bitch, let's do this. Get up.
Yeah, yeah.
And he grabs a stake, and then she turns around toward him, and just all she has to do is get impaled. But yeah. I like, that's the Van Helsing that I like, who is vulnerable at times, but also tough as nails and able to do the job.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt.
And I like it. And then in the ending for the film too, which I think is one of the film's better moments, when Van Helsing gets impaled, and then Dracula turns his attention to Jonathan, Jonathan Harker. I'm like, do not turn your back on Van Helsing, okay?
Yeah,
you know, he's not dead yet, and he's gonna tell you, he's gonna show you.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a few things which are really good about that version.
Yeah,
I mean, there are many things very flawed with it, but there's some really good elements in it as well. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. What do you guys think of the Spanish Dracula from 1931?
I loved it.
If it weren't for the complete insomniac like non-acting of Carlos Valerius as Dracula, it would be the superior version.
Is it just me, or is it just
me
a little bit chubby?
Also, I could take chubby. I can't take you being so stone-faced and not projecting an ounce of charisma. You know, Lugosi is an artist doing that. But you take Lugosi and put him in George Melford's film, best ever, greatest ever.
One really can't beat Lugosi's one-of-a-kind looks. Nobody looked like Lugosi.
No.
You know, and it's and I will say, I think that the two women, Lupita Tovar and the other woman, I forgot what the actress's name is, but really stunning and better than Helen Chandler. And I forgot who the other woman was.
And is it Frances D?
Something like that.
But I'll say this. Did you notice in the 31 in the Melford version, the eroticism that's there for 1931?
Yes, I did, and it's really amazing. Very unusual. It's much more sensual, and I think it adds an enormity to it. It's weird how the Lugosi Dracula is sort of missing, is devoid of that kind of eroticism and sensuality.
Right.
Well, and I also think it kind of suffers from the fact that it's based on the Balderston Dean play, as compared to Bram Stoker's novel Fully. And that's the problem, because when you place it into the drawing room, it becomes so static. It's a film, like a film stage play. I prefer the early scenes where Todd Browning was opening up, you know, everything at the Dracula's castle and so forth. And you saw the armadillo, you saw the rats. I like that part.
Yeah,
going to London in the drawing room doesn't work.
Very true, very true. And you know, yes.
Go ahead, Joe.
Oh no, I was gonna agree. You know, especially with the mirror. Hello, I'm Van Helsing. Look at my mirror. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I used to be the one that we really appreciated Edward Van Sloan as Van Helsing until Peter Cushing came along and blew everything out of the water.
Very true. In fact, this leads me to something I was going to ask you, gentlemen. Speaking about our beloved Pauline, what do you guys think of Satanic Rites of Dracula?
I am not a fan, because I feel like it's too much of an Avengers episode. I felt Dracula is out of place in an Avengers episode, but I like, of course, certain parts of it. I think it's lively. It has a lot of, you know, action to it. I enjoy some of the spy elements. you know, but oh my gosh, those the outfits.
Hey,
yeah, those bikers and so forth, that all comes out of the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, they had the mod look. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, it was the mod. That was the fashion back then, man. Give it a break.
I wasn't a huge fan of AD 72 either. Loved the opening and the ending, but when they take it out of Victorian London and bring it to the 70s mod, you know, the beat scene,
It's a little bit painful to see, to watch. Now, one thing I'm not sure if Pauline told you, that she intimated to me, she was supposed to play the Martian Hunt character in AD 72.
Yeah, I don't recall that we asked about that, but I'm not surprised.
She told me that she was cast initially to play the Martian Hunt character in AD 72. And they decided to go with Marsha Hunt at the last minute.
Did she express a reason as to why they decided?
Marsha Hunt at that time was a bigger name. She had been involved with Mick Jagger. She had was a recording artist as well, and she had. So they thought, Hammer thought, that she was a bigger name, which is debatable when you think of.
True.
You know, at that time.
For me,
go ahead now.
I was just going to say, as far as the Satanic Rites of Dracula, I liked it well enough. It brought a little bit of new, which is always good, but always dangerous. But I tell you, watching her in that, you know, all the other vampire girls were generic blonde or brunette, pretty-ish girls, except for Joanna Lumb, who I love. She was the one that brought the real flavor to it.
Yeah.
You know, if you have something, you have a plate of something, and then she was the spicy dish in that. She brought the real flavor and sexiness to it compared to the others. Because I actually didn't find the other vampire women in it to be sexy, and I generally expect that.
Well, I kind of thought that she was in the moments that she has, which is just in that whole basement scene, the moments that she has were, she was the most feral.
There's no doubt. She stands out, and it's such a strong presence in those scenes. And I agree with you guys. I think that the rest of the girls are kind of like plain Janes.
Hello.
And
that's Pauline, a great way to say it.
Yeah. Which is unusual, because one always thinks that Hammer always aimed very high with these kind of vampire girls. But Pauline, of course, she just jumps off the screen and makes you think, my God, who is that?
Right. And I would have thought it would have been interesting if perhaps American producers like Sam Markov would have noticed her and maybe given her a chance to appear in, because Blackula and Scream, Blackula, Scream were quite the hit in the States right about that time.
She would have been perfect in those movies. You know, that's a good question. In fact, next time I speak to her, I'm going to ask her if she was ever approached to be in those movies.
That would be, you know, fantastic.
See what I can find out, because for all I know, she was approached, or maybe was doing something else and couldn't appear in it.
Well, I guess if she was being considered, and then all of a sudden you have Pam Grier available to do it, maybe you go with Pam, but because Pam is Pam. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
But I could see her in a supporting role or something like that in either of those films.
It, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
Miles, before we wrap this up, do you have a website where our listeners can find you?
The best thing to do would be to, I'm going to be having a very soon in the coming weeks, there's going to be a Dreams of Darkness Facebook page, and it's going to be
Evil
Facebook page, which is going to go up. And then really any day now, everything should go back up on the IMDb, and which will have the trailers, of course, right there, like they have now, very nicely with the trailers right on the IMDb. And so that's the extent of it right now. I don't have a personal acting page per se right now.
Okay, so no website. Yeah. Tell us your favorite hangout spot where we can send everybody to go, you know, watch you from across the street.
I was going to say, probably should have, just for his voice, he probably should have an OnlyFans account.
That's right.
Just for, if you want...
Oh, come on.
erotic sex talk from Miles Dalton. You go to this.
Come on, just make a ringtone out of "I am Dracula, bid you welcome." That right there is my new ringtone.
That would be good. That would be good. You want to hear? You want to hear a slight Barry White impression?
Sure.
Okay, let's see how I can do this. Okay, I said this once to Pauline, and she really laughed a lot. I said, "It would be ecstasy if you would lay down next to me."
Oh, see, that's the Uncanny Valley right there.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
It would be ecstasy if you lay down next.
You know, to quote the great Seth MacFarlane, who has a response when he runs in as his character Ted, the talking bear, when he runs into Morgan Freeman, and he hears Morgan Freeman talk. I'm going to say this now. He says, "I could lie on a bed of your voice."
There you go.
Yeah.
Got a great voice.
Thank you so much. The cosmos smiled upon me in that respect. So I'm very fortunate. Guys, one thing I just want to quickly interject.
Okay.
That about my movies, and which would be, you know, Dreams of Darkness and Cryptoview and the successive ones. Everything is being shot on 35mm film.
Oh, thank God.
Oh wow. Yeah, we are big fans.
I shoot only film.
See, I knew I loved this guy.
Now you take a look at something that's shot on digital, and do you say for the most part, "My God, this is shit"?
It used to be that way. It's gotten better, but I can still tell the difference. And
yeah, it's still plainly obvious. Yeah.
It's not film. It's never going to look like film. And it's like you guys. I grew up with film. When I was a little boy, I always wanted a movie camera. I always wanted to make movies. And my ethos is, it's 35mm film forever. So I'm very proud to say Dreams of Darkness is all 35. If you guys see that trailer for Dreams of Darkness, it's all 35mm film. Crypto Viva will be 35. Everything is, I won't even touch a digital camera.
That
is
fantastic.
That's going to draw us to your films, and I hope it draws many other people. But people ask me, you know, what do I think of the difference between film and digital? And you know, I tell them, when you have the chance to watch Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven,
yes.
With the cinematography of both Nestor Almendros, who
the great cinematographer, yeah.
And Haskell Wexler.
Yes.
You want film.
Yes.
That's to me like the visual masterwork of film, watching that film, because it deals with the open country, you know, quite much in the story. So
yes.
A visual, and you watch it, you kind of weep. But you don't have that on digital, I'm sorry.
Well, you can't even imagine Brides of Dracula being shot digitally.
Oh, with Jack Gasher's photography? No.
Oh, I mean, it's stunning. It's gorgeous. And that's 35mm film. It's just, nothing can look like that now. Nothing.
Well, anything that Freddie Francis did, either. You cannot, actually, you can't do that on digital.
Go ahead, Al.
Thank you. I was going to say, you know, no one says, "I shot it on 35, and I'm so sorry I did that." No one says that.
And for me, it's something I'm very proud to. It's my ethos, and I'm shooting 35 until I die. And thankfully, Kodak is still making 35mm film. So
yes.
It's glorious. It's glorious.
I'm going to tell you, it's been terrific to have you on our show, Miles John Dalton. You're terrific. Keep fighting the fight for 35mm film.
Kevin, thank you so much.
You have automatic fans in us for just that simple fact.
Thank you, guys. God bless you. And
you're so welcome.
And Kevin and guys, and thank you so much for having me on. It's been a blast. We could talk all night, couldn't we?
Yes, you guys could. Yes. You know what? You guys blew me out of the water. I'm like, Joe, Kevin, and Al, they took this and ran with it. That's okay.
Well, see, Anthony's the kid. He's the one who learns from this.
I'm turning 44, and it's like, yeah, you guys are classic, classic. You go for it. Well,
at least we're getting you to see The Legend of Hell House, because that is
awesome, yeah.
That scene with Clive Revel holding the teacup in his hand and it bursts in his face is scarier to me than anything Poltergeist could do. Or anything, other films to do. When you just see it in it, and then you have that whole meat platter that comes racing, sliding down the table and nearly impales him.
It's amazing. And you know what's amazing about, just one last thing to interject about that, is what's amazing about those effects, they were done in front of the camera. Those were live effects that they had to find a way to do that.
Mm-hmm. So we are a big fan of practical effects here.
I love it.
Well, I'm still wondering how do you break the cup in his hand while it's in his hand
and I look like it,
you know?
I'm sure
it was already a pre-broken cup or something like that, and you just have to shake it a little bit. But
it's very ingenious how they do that. Yeah. Really, really ingenious. And there's nothing like practical effects in front of the camera. It's still, even to this day, if you can do it, it's still a very realistic way of doing things. Yeah.
Yeah. We are also practical effects guys. To heck with the CGI, stuff.
I despise it too. There's nothing impressive about putting 1,000 extras in digitally, but try getting 1,000 extras on a set.
Right.
And costume them and get them organized. That separates the men from the boys, as they say.
Right, right. Well, Miles, it's been terrific. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Miles. This has been
guys, thank you. It's been wonderful. A pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're so welcome, Miles. And by the way, Kevin will get a hold of you when the show is ready to come out, and so you can post it wherever you want.
Keep the dates open, because we would like to have you back once Crypt of Evil is completed and once the Dracula pictures get rolling.
Kevin, I would love to.
I just don't want to hear a story of there being an injury on the set because you did something to Antonio Mayans or he did something to you. Okay? Because you're very intense actors.
Well, if he puts a stake in me, I'll just take the stake out. How's that sound?
Because Antonio might do the Peter Cushing thing, and Christopher Lee said Peter was really intense when he did those scenes, when they would do the fight scenes. So,
hey, that's why they look so good. Yeah,
that's right. But
I think that, guys, thank you so much. It's been
thank you very much, Miles.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure, guys. Thank you so much. Take care of yourselves.
You have a great night and all the best with the upcoming projects, Miles.
Thank you so much, and to you guys too. Take care. God bless, and I hope to speak to you soon at some future date.